Accession number 23329, reel 27.
Mr. Carl Younger, reel 27.
When I got back to England in April 1945, there was ex-prisoners had the priority for returning home, but if people could work here in England in a company associated with their work in Australia pre-war, they could go on a later ship. So I chose to do that, and I worked in the Commonwealth Bank of Australia in the Strand branch in Australia House, and I stayed for 6 months before returning to Australia, where I remained for 3 years and then decided to return to England. I was rather keen at that time on becoming a cartoonist, and there weren't very many opportunities in Australia at the time. And also I had very much liked England, and I wanted to see more of it. I didn't know whether I was going to be permanently here, but I rather thought I was, and indeed that proved to be the case. Shortly after my return in 1949, first of all, I went back to France and rediscovered my friend Hélène Bouvelot, and I tried to repeat my journey on the run of 1942, finally arriving at the town where I was caught, Provins, and as I couldn't very well sleep in the jail, I'd been trying to sleep in the same barns with mixed success, and I was directed to a hotel. It turned out the proprietor had been head of the resistance, and I should have been handed to him by the French police and flown back to England by Lysander. I also met again Jean Lelong, who had accompanied Jean Bouvelot and myself when I was taken out to the house on the edge of the quarry. And indeed it was through him that I found them again, because he had written to the Red Cross to see if they could locate me, which they did. Back in London, I was walking down past the law courts, and I saw my old camp leader, Dixie Deans, coming towards me. For me, it was rather like having Churchill coming towards me, and I wasn't quite sure what to do. And eventually, I decided just to give him a little half salute, just to show him I knew who he was. And he swung round and grabbed my arm and said, "Cal, you were going to pass me by." And I didn't even think he knew my surname, let alone my first name. Anyway, he said, "I'm just on the way to the Crown in Chancery Lane. I'm going to meet Frank Hunt and Ken Bowden and Larry Slattery about coming. So I did go, and we began to meet there every Thursday lunchtime, and various others joined us from time to time. These were all people who, in the camp, I'd looked up to as the great and the good, and to be having a drink with them, well, it's rather like having a drink with Bradman. Anyway, Larry Slattery, who was the very first prisoner of the war, said one day, why don't we pool all the names and addresses we have and have a theatre night? And we did that, and about 40 people turned up. And they all said, oh, we know so-and-so and so-and-so else. And so we laid on a reunion at a pub, the Codgers, just off Fleet Street. And this became an annual event with more and more people coming, and we originals formed ourselves into a self-appointed committee, and eventually, but not until 1962, we constituted the Royal Air Force's Ex-Prisoner of War Association properly. In 1956, my own book, No Flight from the Cage, was published, and the publishers threw a launch party to which people like Group Captain Massey and Wingsday and a lot of the ex-prisoner friends came, and at one point Lord Tedder walked in and made himself known, not that we didn't recognize him, and he stayed for the rest of the evening. And that was really the beginning of the association, which, as I say, we constituted properly in 1962. We later formed a charitable fund, and when Larry Slattery died, we set up the Larry Slattery Memorial Fund. Larry was a very fine violinist and had led the camp orchestra. He could have been a professional, but didn't want to be, though he did occasionally play with the big professional orchestras. But he loved coaching children, in especially little chamber music groups. And so we thought that would be the way we'd remember him. We established the charity, the Larry Slattery Memorial Fund, to help musically talented children. And here in 2004, it's still going. It's not large. Two of the trustees are sons of members. One is Gordon Hunt, the world-celebrated oboist, whose father, Frank Hunt, was the conductor of the orchestra in Germany and himself a very good violinist. And more recently, we set up a memorial trust and raised about 35,000 to 40,000 for a statue which is having been unveiled by the Duke of Edinburgh in May last year. is now standing in the RAF Museum in front of the Lancaster, but later, when the museum builds a special POW area, it will be the centrepiece. The original informal committee of the XPOW Association became the nucleus of the committee for the association proper, and I'm now the only survivor of the original group, so I've served something like 50, 52 years on the committee. I was the original treasurer, but I now am the, and have been for a long time, the welfare officer. I look after the three charities, and I also produce the Kriegi, which is our main newsletter. It was published much more frequently in the early days when it was the only newsletter we had, but we now send out small, you know, single or double page newsletters, I suppose. The Kriegi has become more an occasional journal.
Cal, following your war experiences, what feelings are you left with?
It's very difficult, of course. I've never really had the problems that some people have had, who still have nightmares and that kind of thing. I learned a great deal. I had an opportunity to write and draw. I did a series of caricatures of people in my barrack in watercolour, and at the end of the war, when we went out on the march and I wanted to carry as little as I could, I didn't take them. About 3 or 4 years ago, I visited Ron Buchanan in Australia, in Queensland, and to my surprise, he had a glass-top table, and under the glass were my caricatures. But I think the association itself has been a tremendous standby. We carried on the camaraderie of those wartime days. You can overdo it. There are people who can't seem to forget the war at all. There are others who didn't want to know. They wanted to put it behind them and get on with their careers and never joined the association until they got to retirement, and then it became an attraction, and they were glad to renew old friendships, sometimes 40 or 50 years old. So I think I got more out of it than I lost, in a way. It wasn't a good time, from 20 to 23, to be incarcerated. I came out very immature in many ways, and in other ways, I suppose, mature beyond my years. And it took many years, I would say, before I really settled down and felt at peace with myself. I still appreciate the opportunity I had to write and draw, and I did write several books later on, illustrated some, did a book of cartoons of service and POW life, but most of all it's the friendships which I still retain. The combine partners I had, Dick Vernon and Toby Tobias, are still alive. Toby is in a home in Canada, having had a massive stroke. Dick lost his wife last year, but is in fair shape himself. But many of my friends I made not so much in Germany, but in the association since. It didn't matter that I didn't know them in Germany. The same spirit existed, so they were the same people that had become friends in Germany. I think that's what I gained most, and a degree of tolerance that I probably wouldn't have had. You certainly had to be tolerant or go mad. On balance, I think I got more than I lost.
Thank you for sharing.
Of course, it also understanding of human nature.
Thank you, Carl.
Thank you
for sharing your experience.
I began writing when I was 10 years old. I completed my first book by the time I was 13, and I always wanted to be a writer. But after the war, I found I couldn't write anything except about the war. And so I thought the best way out of this is just to write my own story and forget it. And I think it did the trick, really. It was cathartic, and I was able to get on and write other things after that.
Did you find that after writing No Flight from the Cage that you had others contact you, and you know, with their stories and?
Yes, quite a few people contacted me, but another friend, Vic Gammon, spent about 20 years of his life collecting the stories of fellow POWs, and that led ultimately to two books, Not All Glory and No Time for Fear. Vic died before completing No Time for Fear, and on his deathbed asked his wife to ask me to finish it, which I did, and it was published by Castle. my other books a bit few and far between, because I became the chief executive, I suppose you'd call it, director of a large foundation, and didn't have a lot of time, but I published one novel and then was diverted into 20th century Irish history, and I did three books, including Ireland Civil War, which was a huge tome, and remained the definitive history until quite recently, and the book itself was in print for over 30 years. The other two didn't do so well. But I haven't written anything now since 1980.
You have quite a lot, painted quite a bit with oil paintings.
Yes, yes, I can add that if you like.
Yes.
I became very keen on painting rather than cartooning, and I did get to the point where I planned to go to Spain and join a sort of artist colony there that I knew about, and I was just going to paint and write as long as my money held out, and depending of course on what I could sell. But it was then that a philanthropist asked me if I would run this trust, which was going to help young artists and writers and musicians, especially musicians. We established the Kirkman Concert Society in 1963, which gives platform opportunities to very talented young musicians. We put on about 15 concerts a year in the Wigmore Hall and the Purcell Room, and of the hundreds of young artists whom we promoted, many are household names, and many are professors at the music schools, and that has been a joy in my life too.
Do you manage to get back to Australia very often?
I went back to Australia for the first time in 1962, when I'd been working up till then still in the Commonwealth Bank of Australia, and as I say, I was intending to go to Spain, but instead I accepted the offer of the charitable trust job, and so I used my returns superannuation to fly around the world. I flew in a comet, that's right, flew in a comet to Japan, and then went on to Australia, New Zealand, Canada, and America. And I started the new job when I got back. I didn't go again until 1976, when my wife accompanied me. She had never been to Australia. her sister was living in New Zealand. And then after that, we went two or three times in the 80s. And when I retired at the end of 1989, we celebrated that by a round the world trip, most of the time we spent in Australia. And from then on, we went out every 2 years. Our daughter had emigrated to Australia. She didn't plan to emigrate. She went out on a working holiday in 1977 and stayed. So we had that as an attraction, but also we attended the reunions of 460 Squadron, which took place every 2 years. So the reunions dictated the time of year we went, but we went as much, of course, to see my family and our daughter and my wife's sister in New Zealand. And I went out on my own the last time, which was in October 2002. Yes, that's right. I don't know whether we'll be going again. I hope we will, but we haven't any immediate plans.